Let's head over to the Zoom line. Mr. Kunal Patel with the Dallas Federal Reserve. Their recent energy survey was just March 27th is when it was published, and we're happy to have Mr. Kunal Patel on the program. How are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing great, Jason. How are you?
Not too bad. I noticed on my news searches that Louisiana published a story on it. I saw Texas did a story on it. So some of the other surrounding states for Texas are, of course, impacted by this survey. But it certainly seems that this survey has picked up a lot of news. What was your kind of your initial takeaway from this survey? Was there anything that stood out to you differently?
So great. Thank you for catching all those reactions and articles written about the survey. Definitely, it does get that pickup. And I think, again, there's when it comes to, like, let's say new insights, I think some things that may have been a little bit more unexpected, right, is that we have an index for oil production, for natural gas production. They both turned negative. They've been positive for many straight quarters. That suggests that production declined quarter over quarter. I think people are expecting that, you know, activity's been kind of flat. And so that's what we saw in our latest release. I think, you know, a lot of people look at our break-evens for oil. It gives an idea of when, for us, we ask, you know, at what price will firms... at what price can your firm profitably drill a new well? The average for the survey this time was $64 per barrel. That's up from 62 when we asked the same question in the first quarter of 2023. But then I should also add, we then disaggregated the data to large and small firms. So everyone on the call can know, you know, larger firms are, they produce 10,000 barrels a day or more. Smaller firms for our classification purposes are less than 10,000 barrels a day. For larger firms, it was $58 per barrel. For smaller firms, 67. So, you know, that difference kind of shows the benefits of economies of scale. Whether it's, well, they don't say it specifically, you know, you can kind of tell from that difference, it has to be driven by the ability to drill those longer laterals, ability to negotiate better rates with service firms and suppliers. And then, of course, we had questions around the methane charge. We had questions around the LNG export facility pause. Just a lot of, you know, a variety of insights in our latest release.
Was there anything on supply chain issues? The only reason I bring that up is because you always hear rumblings about supply chain issues. And since COVID, there is some realities and some sensitivity. Suez Canal, Huntington Beach, when the tanker had some issues there. So we have seen some recent examples, but I bring it up because if there was any issues, and then we just had the Baltimore Bridge thing happen, we're not even talking hurricanes here, so we could see some hiccups in supply chain. Did you get anything back from that, or was that at all mentioned in comments or anything?
So we do have an index around supplier delivery time, but again, I think that's a little bit different. This is supplier delivery time specifically, you know, is your company getting their equipment on time or not? And the index suggested that for more firms, they were getting their equipment more on time than not. So like the index was negative. Okay. That suggests that like on a quarter over quarter basis, their equipment is coming in a little bit faster than before. But again, this is just equipment. I think what we've seen in the oil patch over the past year, let's say the last 12 months, is, you know, the rig count has come down. That's probably alleviated some stress. There's, I think this time, almost no comments on employment. Employment has always been a very hot topic, you know, when we're thinking of 2021 and 2022, but no comments on employment. The index was, you know, positive, but very low single digits, suggesting that employment has continued to crawl upwards. But I think within the sector, it's not as like heated as it was, you know, a year ago. And that's around the time when, you know, the rig count kind of peaked in that time frame. Obviously, we've had rig counts much higher in the past, but on that upwards trend since 2020. You know, it was kind of like, you know, there was like that peak in the first quarter of 2023.
How about the alphabet agencies, whether it's the EPA, the ESG, the SEC, or anything along those lines? You know, we had the Inflation Reduction Act, we had some methane changes. Was there any mentioning of anything along those lines in your survey and special questions?
So we do have a special question, and for us, the big question is to kind of figure out what the impact is on the firm. And so we did ask, the question reads, the US EPA released guidance earlier this year regarding the methane charge from the Inflation Reduction Act. What net impact will the methane charge have on your firm? And the results get disaggregated between E&P firms and services firms. For E&P firms, you know, significantly negative 34%, slightly negative 46% of respondents. Neutral was 19%, and there was 1% that said significantly positive. Now, you can then disaggregate it between large and small firms. What you'll find is that more small firms are saying significantly negative impact versus large firm. It was 38% of small firms saying significantly negative versus 20%. Of large firms. And again, large firms are the ones that are producing 10,000 barrels a day or more. There are obviously much larger firms than that 10,000, but that's where we kind of split it out. For services firms, you know, neutral was 41%. And then when it comes to negative, slightly negative 27, significantly negative 20. But then there was 11% that said slightly positive. You know, I think within this methane charge, there are some other incentives that may be out there. I'd have to look through the comments, though, if they are specifically related to the EPA. Again, I always say with these comments, we don't endorse the comments. They are the views of those specific executives. It would be a view of one specific executive, but it does provide that additional color that can be insightful.
I love the comments because it gives great context to what you know. You really have to present in a neutral format. You know, you have to give us vanilla. And the comments are the rocky road and the triple sherbet and all kinds of good stuff, because then you can really add in. When we talked about some of the bigger companies, some of the smaller companies, whether it's from the supply chain, the bigger companies obviously have issues. The smaller companies can be a little more nimble when we're talking about some of the different workforce issues, and we're talking about the rig countdown and all these different fluidity examples. But there has been a lot of mergers and acquisitions as well. And whether it's a consolidation of power, consolidation of assets, maybe it's merging with a carbon company or a ethanol company or a LG company or a wind company, you're seeing changes happen in a lot of different areas. What did you guys find when it came to mergers and acquisitions for the last survey period?
So in our last survey, it's a great question. It's definitely happening. There is this consolidation. There we did not ask any, let's say, specific questions on it. We did, of course, get some comments around it. I think, let me think back to our prior quarter, though, because we may have had in our prior quarter, I know this is going back, but 3 months ago, we did ask this question, and it was in October 2023, acquisitions of two E&P companies valued at $50 billion or more were announced. Do you expect more deals of this size to occur in the next 2 years? And 77% said yes. So it's kind of a view out there that, you know, this consolidation will happen. There are specific benefits. Again, this time, no special questions, but there are comments out there. And so, you know, here's an example of a comment. Again, don't endorse it, but it adds that color. Our biggest concern is the evolving merger and acquisition activity of U.S. E&P operators. This comes from an oil and gas support services firm. As the operator pool shrinks, the oil field services will inevitably follow suit. This leads to concerns on additional oil services mergers, or worse, aggressive pricing from competitors striving to stay alive. And so the kind of landscape is changing. There are, you know, larger E&P firms out there. As you know, though, there are thousands of E&P firms out there, but it looks like the bigger firms are getting bigger. There are some comments, concerns specifically from oilfield services firms, but there's also comments from E&P firms. They'll be very specific about the fact that, you know, it's still hard to find capital if you're a small company, or your cost to produce is higher. And so, you know, I can always give this one example of size, right? Like, we asked this question: what West Texas intermediate oil price does your firm need to cover operating expenses from existing wells, right? This is the wells that are already producing. What oil price do you need? And the larger firms, again, 10,000 barrels a day or more, fourth quarter 2023, they require $26, but the smaller firms require $44. And so this is where that scale can make a difference on the E&P side. And then on the oilfield services side, there's just commentary around how this consolidation is impacting their business.
I'm looking at the comments right now, and I see something about natural gas. I see LNG pause. When we interview Dr. Lauren Scott, who writes the economic energy policy for the state of Louisiana, he did mention that if you were going to be doing interstate business, you were probably going to be okay, because if you needed a pipeline to cross state lines, it ain't going to happen. So, you know, when I think of East Texas, when I think of LNG, it's amazing how, you know, really those can be wild cards. But this one comment really speaks volumes to me, which is natural gas is not a large part of our operation. Therefore, the impact is not significant for us, but it will be for operators deeply involved in natural gas production. That's quite amazing. Somebody who's not day-to-day involved with it, but feels it's going to be so important. They actually put in the comments like, hey guys, listen, this ain't going to affect me, but it is going to affect me. So heads up. What was your takeaway from natural gas? Because that comment really stood out to me, like, oh, okay, I should pay attention to natural gas here. So anyway, a lot of different angles with natural gas. That's all.
So for natural gas, I think one thing we know is the spot price for natural gas is at kind of like a historical decade type low. I think it's sub $2. Expectations are for it to increase. Of course, that timing is kind of uncertain. And then when it comes to the comments, again, for that specific one, you know, one thing to consider is that they're commenting on other firms. So most executives know their firm the best, but then knowing what other firms will think, you know, again, it's not their specific firm. And so, you know, we did ask a question to kind of get, I think that question was, again, related to E&P firms, right? So we asked the question, how does the recent pause in approval of LNG export facilities impact your expectations for your firm's natural gas production 5 years from now compared with before the pause? Just to get their idea, like at the end of the day, we want to know, you know, how has your expectations for production changed? And we did 5 years out, right? Because these facilities take 3 to 5 years to build. And what we found was among the firms that are primarily focused, you know, 48% said slightly lower, 24% said significantly lower, and 24% said no impact. So there are some firms that said, hey, it's not going to impact us at all. And then others that did. We also did the not focused on natural gas. That's where the no impact was 58%. That was the most selected. But there were still some that said there would be an impact. 19% said slightly lower. 22% said significantly lower. You know, there's a lot of reasons why there can be impacts on natural gas, but there can also be many other reasons that are unknown. So like one comment says the LNG export pause effect is difficult to forecast several years into the future, as both demand, supply, and commodity pricing can all change. And so I think we wanted to kind of, at the end of the day, kind of drill down into the impact on firms, but there is, of course, a lot of uncertainty going further out. I think, though, the one thing that they can all agree on is that the price of natural gas is low, and that, you know, higher prices are needed for more activity. But at the end of the day, I think also on the flip side, one thing to also consider is that I think U.S. natural gas production hit an all-time high in late 2023. So there has been a lot of activity and there's been a lot of growth in terms of natural gas production. Just, you know,
LNG. Right now. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
just that it's been probably a little bit softer recently.
Well, I mean, when we take a look at LNG pauses, and I'm looking at the comments here, Bureau of Land Management leasing delays, which would be another pause, additional permitting costs. I mentioned Dr. Lauren Scott with just some of the pipeline delays that are happening, trying to get interstate permitting. I'm taking away there's a lot of delays and a lot of, you know, kind of pauses and things. And so when I hear record profits, you know, going to the oil companies and a number of different things, what did you see anything in there that was causing, you know, is it consolidation that's creating these record profits? Is there something, is the business just changing that much? Cause you know, the headlines seem to say record profits, but as I'm kind of looking through some of these different surveys and things, I see a lot of reasons why there wouldn't be. That's all. Talk to me about what is kind of the baseline, because like I said, the headlines seem to be that a lot of the bigger companies are doing okay with shareholder payouts and things like that.
So great question. I think if you're thinking about 2024 versus, let's say, like the second half of our last decade, let's say take like 2016 to 2019. So commodity prices for oil are higher, right? I think in that time frame, we were in kind of like a $50 to $60 world. And, you know, it did tick up to 70 and maybe for a little bit to 80. But prices today are $80 a barrel. There was also at times in that last part of that prior decade where there was a discount in Midland. So maybe you were the global price was high, but you weren't getting as much in Midland. Today, that differential isn't really, really there. It's pretty small. It's almost transport from Midland to the Gulf Coast. On top of that, so you have higher commodity prices. And then some of the profitability is kind of from outside of upstream. So our survey is upstream firms. It's your E&P firms, your oilfield services firms, but there may be also profitability specific to the refining industry and specific to the chemicals industry. And so a lot of it is at the end of the day, kind of disaggregating, you know, each of these companies, what is their profitability versus prior? And then what specific sectors are driving that? And some part of it you may find is related to refining, relating to chemicals, but then also related to E&P. And I think as we go back, you know, the survey is in it's either seventh or eighth year. I think there's always a theme of challenges. But at the end of the day, when you tackle these challenges, then you have opportunity, right? And I think there's always challenges in any business. But at the end of the day, when it comes to profitability, right, specific to profitability, you know, commodity prices are higher. Obviously, natural gas is a bit lower. But also, if you're hedging natural gas, you know, you might be hedging 2025 at $3.50. And so that's kind of similar to what we saw in the prior decade. Maybe it's a little bit higher. And again, the consolidation definitely helps in terms of getting that economies of scale, which means that you know, you have on a per production basis, you don't have as much costs. And so these are kind of the trends that may have helped for the specific to the profitability.
So kind of wrapping up here, as I'm looking at a couple of the questions and surveys, and DallasFed.org is where you can find the survey. We'll have it linked up at the Crude Life sites as well. Kunal Patel is our guest, one of the authors and research economists who, seventh year you said was this survey?
Yeah, started the 2016, and I always I'll sit there and count it, and I'll be like, well, what is defined like as the first year and the second year, right? Like, but you know, 2016 is when it started. We're in 2024, so I think it's like a seventh or eighth year.
Mm-hmm. So the other question I had to do with carbon, and had to do with orphan wells, and had to do with well, I'll just call it carbon management. Was there anything that had to do with that vein of the oil and gas industry, whether it's through the orphan well, abandoned well capping programs, or whether it's through, you know, carbon sequestration. Has that made it into these surveys yet?
I don't think, when it comes to the commentary, there hasn't been too much specific to that. I think it's an interesting topic that's out there, just that it hasn't made it to commentary. I think the other big thing, of course, is when we ask these questions, we try to make them something that kind of impacts them all, that has like big implications. I think these are topics which have been mentioned many times, but it's kind of, I guess, to answer your question specifically, we have not asked too many specific questions on them. Sure. I think we may have asked, you know, what are your thoughts on, you know, whether, you know, carbon capture will be economical with the Inflation Reduction Act. We asked that back in 2022. We always like to ask, you know, what are your plans around reducing emissions? Those are generally in our fourth quarter surveys. We'll ask questions around sustainability. I think that the topic around orphan wells, you know, can be interesting, just that, like, depends on how these companies kind of think of, you know, how many orphan wells that they have. And it just, it varies by company.
What I find interesting about the orphan wells, is more from a, revenue standpoint. And the only reason I bring it up is because, you know, there is a little bit of a surgence of business, but then my understanding is, you know, once the well's capped, that's it. It's not a producing well afterwards. So it's kind of like, it's like a little stimulus and keeps things going a little bit. That's the only reason I ask is from that standpoint. And then from the carbon standpoint, a lot of oil and gas companies seem to be getting into whether it's carbon sequestration, carbon storage, or carbon pipelines. And, you know, there's a variety of different reasons for that. But, you know, Exxon, they're getting into carbon sequestration. I saw Oxy is now a carbon management company. Somebody was telling me the other day, they're no longer an energy company. They're branding themselves as a carbon management company and that sort of thing. So, but I'm looking through the comments. I see clean coal pops up, and so we're you see it in kind of smatterings throughout, but it's not quite as direct and in your face like you mentioned. There's not specific questions related to it, but it does pop up from time to time and that sort of thing. So okay, what's your final takeaway from this study? What's your message to the industry?
I think the main thing right now is that we kind of were debating, like, because activities kind of, you know, growth in activities kind of zero. So I think a lot of times the industry is, they're doing wait and see. Let's see what's going to happen. And then we kind of adjust. Now, it could also be that they may not be as price sensitive as they were in the past. I think that, you know, at the end of the day, it takes time to go from rigs to production. But in many ways, with activity flat, it seems like a lot of companies are wait and see. Let's see what happens. Obviously, these companies are very price sensitive. So our outlook index was slightly positive this latest quarter. That's because, again, I think the price of oil moved up from our last survey period around 70 to around 80 this time. It looks like a lot of the strain around employment, you know, at least it's abated a bit. Obviously, I think it's a longer term challenge, but at least in the near term, you know, there's not as much commentary around we need more employees, so on and so forth. It looks like actually costs are continuing to increase. They're just not at that breakneck pace we saw in 2022 going into 2023. So, you know, obviously hard to always forecast the future. Everyone wants to know what's going to happen next. But it seems like in many ways, a lot of these indicators show kind of a very steady state.
Kunal Patel is our guest, DallasFed.org. Research surveys is where you can find the survey. And any final thoughts, sir, as we kind of wrap this up today?
Nope. Obviously, our next survey release, the date of the release is June 26th. It's a Wednesday. Be released at 9:30 a.m. Central Time. You'll be able to check it out on our website. We of course appreciate everyone, viewing our results, and of course look forward to future conversations on the survey.
Once again, that was Kunal Patel with the Dallas Federal Reserve. Be sure to check out thecrudelife.substack.com for more information and thecrudelife.com as well. My name is Jason Spies. Thank you very much for listening to the Crude Life Podcast.